You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.
This episode of the Kept Faith Podcast is brought to you by 33rd Street Entertainment Presents Josh Adam Myers. Come see the man who created and hosted the goddamn comedy jam on Comedy Central for one night only at the La Jolla Comedy Store, 8 p.m. tonight, May 17th. If it's Thursday and you're listening to this on a Thursday, then it's tonight. And you probably are listening to this on a Thursday. So get your affairs in order, get your friends together, and head to La Jolla. Go to the Comedy Store and see the one and only Josh Adam Myers. Show starts at 8 p.m. and is 21 and up. For more information and how to purchase tickets, go to 33rdstreetent.com. That's 33rdstreetent.com. Also, while you're on the internet, stop by patreon.com/thekeptfaith and become a patron of The Kept Faith today. Get your Kept Faith t-shirt and more surprises and podcasts just for Patreon listeners coming soon.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. Feel good this week.
Yeah.
We're on the uptick. You know, every week it's kind of like an emotional roller coaster, and right now I'm having a positive outlook, Nick.
Yeah, shout out to a two-game series.
Yes.
I like that. That's a lot of fun. And the midweek 12:40 game, I like that. That works for me.
I don't know why. I knew it was happening, but it still caught me by surprise. My phone alerted me the game was starting. I was like, oh, weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on Tuesday, we had another close call with a no-hitter. That got really intense.
Into the eighth, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. A cast-off from the Colorado Rockies. But we have a very special guest tonight. We have Jay Posner from the San Diego Union Tribune.
Welcome.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, gentlemen. Very honored to be here.
Now, Jay, you started a podcast with Kevin Acey this year. It's called the Hot Lava Podcast. We try to have on all the first year podcasts, like the ones we think that are going to make it. So
wow, and we're in that.
Congratulations,
group.
Yeah. By the way.
That's great. That's like the first thing we've won.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
It's part of the podcast. That's great. Yeah,
our christening.
Yeah. Oh, great. It's been interesting. I'm not sure we knew that when we started it was going to be like, we thought, oh, we'll do it every week. And then it was, well, every week doesn't seem like enough. So we'll do it every time they start a series. And now it feels like they start a series like, you know, every other day. But it's worked out to maybe twice a week.
Right.
And I've enjoyed it. I mean, Kevin's gotten, three, four guests that have been on that have been interesting. And I'm hoping we can do a little bit more of that as we get down the road. I mean, he does have, you know, more access than most of the podcasts do. So that's something hopefully we can bring the people is interviews, even just 4 or 5 minutes with someone. I mean, he had Tyson Ross on right after his no-hit bid, speaking of that. And,
yeah.
And I think we've had Joey Lucchese and Eric Lauer and maybe one or two more guys. I mean, one of the things that restricts us a little bit is the language barrier.
Yeah.
You know, this is a pretty heavily Latino roster.
Yeah, that's true.
So it sort of limits the guests that we can have. But it's been good, and I haven't gotten a lot of feedback. But you know, in this day and age, it almost feels like a good thing if people aren't complaining about something, then maybe either they're ignoring us or they're enjoying it.
Well, you know, it's for us a lot of times. It's the podcast is just setting the traps for the feedback. You have to. There's a whole other life to the show afterwards that might happen tonight. I don't know.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
you can find Jay and Kevin's podcast where pretty much wherever you guys can find podcasts on iTunes. And there's other UT podcasts. Abby Hamlin, who's been on a few times, she has a podcast. And hey, you guys are getting into the game. I like it. It's cool.
Yeah, yes. I'm hoping to do more of that. And maybe we'll get going with the Aztecs.
Yeah.
Once we get into the fall and have football and basketball and. And we'll try that maybe at least once a week and see how it goes. You know, we kind of, when Kevin and Michael Gelkin were doing football all the time, they sort of did, it was almost like a podcast, but it was their video that
oh,
they
yeah.
did
right,
every
yeah.
week.
And yeah.
So we'll We don't do that now. I don't think anybody wants to see me on video, so we'll do it with the podcast and see what happens. Well,
if the Chargers had stayed, I would have been there for all the Kevin and Michael Gilkin beach podcasts. I think that was a pretty fun treat at the end there, but
yeah, if the Chargers had stayed is kind of the answer to a lot of
that's
questions.
That's like what you ask every day.
Exactly.
It's quite the equation there.
So you've been at the UT since 1989.
That's correct.
In different capacities. So you were there before the fire sale for the Padres, through the 90s, up to the 98 team, and through the vote yes on C. Last weekend, the Padres celebrated the 1998 team, and the one person I noticed who was there that I couldn't keep my eyes off of was John Moores. How do you feel history is going to treat him moving forward?
Boy, it's really interesting because I've always said, and I said this to someone the other day when I saw that he was there, that, you know, John Moores could have been a god in this town, and I think for a while he probably was. You know, he bought the team at a time where they were struggling with the fire, right after the fire sale.
Right.
You know, built them into this team where in 96, and the 96 season was as exciting a season as there's been here. 98, they go to the World Series. Of course, they have the San Diego luck where they have to run into a juggernaut. Every San Diego team that gets the World Series or the Super Bowl has to play an all-time team. And, you know, and then Moores got Petco Park built, and whatever people think about how it was good for John Moores, I think it was also good for the city and good for baseball and good for baseball fans.
Yeah.
And the Padres were, the first 4 years at Petco were very good. 2004, I think they were in it till the last week. They were in the playoffs in 05 and 06. 07, they got down to that last game in Colorado, the tiebreaker game, where I'm sure we're all still waiting for Matt Holliday to touch home plate.
Yes.
And then, you know, I think John had some personal issues at the time, right after that, and kind of, I guess what, just stopped spending money on baseball and the Padres and let things sort of disintegrate a little bit. And then we went through all the Morad stuff and everything since then. So I think it's an interesting dilemma for, I think, Padre fans on how do you treat John Moores. Here's a guy who saved the team, got this beautiful ballpark built. The team seemed to be on the right track, but then he's also the guy who started this decline that has been pretty much, what, 10, 11 seasons now with just the one exception in 2010, where it's still kind of weird how that happened. So I think he's not going to be treated like Dean Spanos, let's put it that way.
I don't think that'll ever happen.
But I mean, for one thing, it's football. It's not football, it's baseball. This is a football town. But I do think there will be people who will remember John Moores for a lot of the good things he did, but I don't think anyone will forget what happened to him after those good things as well. And I did find it interesting that he was there the other day. I was kind of surprised, like, wow, look who popped up. And I don't think he made himself, you know, available to speak or anything, but I thought it was a good gesture on his part to show up. And he, you know, look, he deserved to be there. I mean, that was, he owned the team then.
Yeah,
it was his team.
He
should be there to be part of the celebration and part of remembering Kevin Towers and all that.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that period because there's the 1998 team and then it goes to that vote. But, I mean, throughout that whole process, it never really felt like John Moores wanted attention himself. And I think that it's almost like he's betting on history, that history will, like, just ignore all the stuff that happened after that and he'll just be the guy that got them downtown. He's the one who saved the team, got them downtown, and that's – as time goes on after he's gone, actually, that'll be the story.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I always talk about this in the sense of, you know, when you write obituaries, there's kind of this format, or at least an old school format, where it's like John Moores, comma, who, and then it's sort of what comes next after that. And I do think he will be remembered more than anything else for being the guy that got Petco Park, you know, owned the Padres, got Petco Park built, as opposed to, you know, John Moores, who had problems and the Padres ended up being terrible and he sold the team and all that stuff. I do think that part is true.
But a lot of that,
whereas Dean Spanos, it'll just be Dean Spanos who moved the Chargers from San Diego and broke the city's heart kind of stuff.
Right.
That will be his legacy.
Yeah. I mean, I think about the Yes on C campaign a lot, and when I was it was the first vote that I ever got to vote in because I just turned 18. But I remember the team selling us on the fact that they had just been in the World Series and that if they built the downtown stadium, they would spend more money. It seems like when people look back at it now, they just look at, well, it's a great ballpark downtown. It's saved this side of downtown. On balance, overall, do you think it's been an overall good thing for the city?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I mean, I think obviously there were problems in the ensuing years right after the vote with lawsuits, and the team was bad in that sense. And I think they were always, the plan was, well, when we get to Petco, we're going to be good. And as I said, I do think when they got to Petco, they lived up to that promise. They were competitive for the first, more than competitive for the first 4 years at Petco. Now, after that, you can argue what happened and why it happened. And there were certainly problems and money that wasn't spent, and the team was not as competitive as we all would hope that it would be as sports fans here. But I do think the initial breakthrough there was, yeah, they were competitive for those 4 years, certainly more than they had been for most of their existence, actually. I mean, you take away that late 90s period.
Yeah, the 96 through
98, and then they weren't very good. Although they were pretty good. I mean, Tom Krasovic wrote about this the other day. That stretch from like 85 to 92, they had some pretty good teams in there. But, you know, only one team in the division went to the playoffs in those years. It was a different time. You had six teams in the division.
Right.
I mean, I remember being in the stands in September of 89, and the Padres were in it until the last week. And I think if they had beaten the Reds like on a Wednesday night, they would have gone to San Francisco that weekend with a chance to tie the Giants for the division. And I still remember Jack McKeon pitching to Eric Davis with a base open.
I remember, I was at that game.
And Eric Davis was a stud then. He was just a great player. And he smashed one off the wall, and the Padres lost. And it was like, well, there goes the season. But, I mean, that's how they were competitive in those years. And they had some really good players. Robbie Alomar and Fred McGriff. And, I mean, some Benito Santiago, that was his time. And obviously Tony, spans that entire period. But I think it's unfortunate to what's happened in the last 10 years for obvious reasons.
Yeah, and I don't think that, I don't hold him accountable for personal problems. I don't think that his intention in selling C was that my life's going to fall apart. And, and we've seen in baseball that personal marital problems or whatever it was have affected teams. I mean, look at what happened to the Dodgers during that whole, the McCourt era and stuff.
Yeah, and that's why I don't like to blame him for that, because, I mean, there was, it was sort of self-inflicted personal problems, which to me are a little bit different than
from what we know. But
again, I do think he deserves more credit than blame, I guess, is the bottom line, because he did get this ballpark built. And, who knows what happens if a ballpark – I mean, look how difficult it is to get anything built here in a sports standpoint. I mean, if it hadn't gotten built at that time, who knows where we'd be.
Yeah.
It'd be crazy.
Well, now the new ownership, they bought the team in 2013, I believe.
I think it was 12. August of 12.
Yeah, and since they've owned the team hasn't been good. They've had a lot of rough seasons. And during that time, something has emerged called Padres Twitter, something that has probably driven you nuts several times. But this is the first ownership group that's had to really deal with that in a significant way. I mean, this year you have a new beat writer, Kevin Acey, who seems to be taking a lot of flack on Padres Twitter for his coverage. How do you feel when one of your beat writers takes that every day?
I think at this point in where we are in media at this time in our history, it just goes with the territory. And I think, I understand that. I know Kevin understands it. I think, it's basically Chargers Twitter was worse probably than Padres Twitter, and Kevin dealt with that for a long time. And I think one of the questions that I always ask and we always wrestle with is how much of our audience is really part of Padres Twitter or Chargers Twitter or anything like that, because there is a whole group of people out there that are never on Twitter and don't know anything about what you and I and the three of us know about Twitter and what we see on Twitter. There are people, I mean, my wife, for instance, she's never on Twitter. She doesn't know what's going on Twitter. And I think there are tens and hundreds of thousands of other people like that. And I think there has to be a question of, you can't let what's on social media drive everything, because that's not necessarily indicative of how people feel, right. How everyone feels. I mean, everyone, you know, doesn't think Kevin does a bad job of covering the Padres. I certainly don't. And I think there are a lot of people, and Kevin, you know, I've been with Kevin, and Kevin runs into people who are very complimentary of the work that he did with the Chargers and that he does now. There is a group of people out there who don't like Kevin. That's fine. There's a group of people out there who don't like anything. Right. I'm as negative as can be on certain things. But even I'm surprised sometimes by the negativity that's out there. But as far as how I feel about it, like I said, I think it's part of the territory. Kevin knows it's out there. We all know it's out there. And I think you'd kind of choose how much you want to interact with it. I don't think you can let it consume you. I think that's the worst thing you can do, is decide that everything revolves around what's on social media, because there's a lot more to life in general, and there's a lot more to the Padres and sports than what you see on social media.
Yeah, I mean, this last week, I think he got a lot of criticism because of some copy editing issues with, like, the cell phone, the sent from my cell phone thing. And can you explain how the process works when he's sending in a story and when things pop up like that?
Well, I think something like that, you know, Kevin, I think what people don't understand is exactly what goes into covering a team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And especially now, when you're trying to get everything done in a particular amount of time, and when you have we don't have a 24/7 web staff. We don't have a web staff. I'm basically the web staff. Mm. I can't work 24/7. I can't be in front of my phone or my computer all the time. I don't think that's expected of me by my boss. And there are times when stories have to be posted, and sometimes, you know, it has to be posted where Kevin writes it and it gets posted, and then someone tries to catch up and read it very quickly. But obviously, in a case like that, and I saw something on that maybe a half hour after, I guess, it happened. And so I went in to fix it, and it had already been fixed. Mm. So whatever it was on there, however it was on there, it certainly wasn't for a long period of time. And look, I'm not trying to excuse mistakes. We shouldn't make any mistakes, but people do make mistakes, and everybody makes mistakes. And I think there's people that are out there that are just eager to try to catch us in anything that goes wrong.
Ready to pounce.
Right. And so we try to be careful. We need to be better. But sometimes something like that happens. He's trying to get something up quickly, and, you know, he doesn't go through the entire thing, and it ends up like that. But I will say that, you know, I'll take the occasional mistake like that and have Kevin do what he does and produce the amount of copy that he produces over, you know, anyone else that's around right now.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. So a couple days ago, a fellow blogger actually broke a story on Franmil Reyes. Do you think that, and everybody gave him credit for it, Dennis and AJ, and, you know, do you think
and Jeff,
right? do you think that era of trying to get the scoop first is over? It seems like whenever, like, a tidbit of information comes out about the Padres, AJ, Dennis, Kevin, they all tweeted out different variations of what the information is. But, like, what do you think about that? That seems like an old school way to keep score.
I think it depends on the situation. You know, Kevin broke the story of the Eric Hosmer trade before anybody else did. To me, that's still a big deal. Uh-huh. Franmil Reyes being called up, roster moves like that, I don't think are quite as big a deal, because eventually, for the most part, those all come out at the same time. And I'm not downplaying. Look, we would love to have every story before anybody else. Uh-huh. I'm also realistic to know that's not going to happen. But I think the important thing to me is to get the biggest stories first. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the Eric Hosmer story to me was the biggest story so far that has happened to this team. And I know that Kevin had that story, you know, before anybody else, because it was a Saturday. I think it was either a Saturday. I guess it was a Saturday night, because I remember we had people over at our house and I had to excuse myself to right. to work on that. But, you know, and I know Kevin also broke the story when they signed AJ Ellis, which is not earth shattering. Hey. But again, it's a veteran guy that they brought in. And it's turned out where he's played more than probably anyone thought. So I think those kind of stories, yeah, you still want to break those. There's still competition. I think Dennis and AJ and Kevin and anyone else out there would tell you that that's still a part of what they do. I think, you know, in terms of feature stories, I mean, I think sometimes, you know, Kevin will write a story one day and AJ might write it 2 days later, or AJ will write a story one day and Kevin will write it 2 days later. To me, those are, you know, those are just, everybody's going to write a Fran Milreis feature. Now, if you do it one day and somebody else does it the next day, I mean, we also have a print edition that we have to time stuff for, where we try to maybe wait a day or so that I'm not crazy about putting a story online on a Monday and then running it in print on a Thursday or a Friday.
Right.
Right. We'll do it occasionally. I'm running a Krasovic column in tomorrow's paper that's been online for a couple days. That's pretty unusual for us. We usually like to try to do it a little quicker than that. But I don't think there's necessarily scoops on features. But I think you can still get a scoop for a big story.
And is there still like a benefit to it, like hits wise or marketing wise, or is it more of like a journalist, you know, like, hey, we got it? And
I think the journalist part of you, the competition part, comes out. But I also think there's a hits benefit. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, especially the Hosmer story got picked up nationally.
Right. Totally.
You know, that's a story that people will the Buster Olneys of the world and Bob Nightingales and people like that will pick up a story like that and maybe retweet it, and then it gets
ESPN like quotes it.
ESPN quotes it. So I mean, there's a status element that goes into that on bigger stories, and those are the stories that I think you want to be first on if you can. I think there's still enough competition out there, and there's still the kind of that journalism gene in you to be first
to break it,
to break that story. But yeah. I'm more excited about breaking a story like that, you know, than breaking a story about a roster call up or something like that. Right. And yet we, you know, when we do that, it's great. I'm always happy to have that information first.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are we going to do with this outfield, guys? Let's talk some baseball.
Stacked.
Sorry about that. There's so many outfielders coming back to health.
I think they should just play Eric Hosmer, a catcher, a pitcher, and six outfielders.
Yeah, like a permanent type of shift.
Some of these shifts are starting to look like
right.
It
so
every
just
day.
Just go with that. And I mean, there's so much. There's so many outfielders. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, Kevin and I talked about it a little bit on our podcast this week. What do you do with all these guys? And especially when Myers and Renfro come back, and you just add to the mix. I don't know. Where do you? I'll turn it around. What do you guys want to see in the outfield?
Well, I think you have to keep playing Janikowski. To me,
for now, anyway.
Since he's come up, there's been this shift in. He was batting the other day when I was at the game, like .371, and I know that's a real small sample size. But every time I'm watching the game or anything, he is on base. He's walking. He's taking a lot of pitches. He's like exactly what you want at the top of that roster. So for me, he's got to keep playing.
See, I just want Margot, Cordero, and if he's healthy, Myers to get as many at bats as possible. That's my ideal.
I'm worried about Margot.
I don't know what's wrong with Will Myers. I mean, what is wrong with Will Myers? Do you know anything? I don't.
Well, it was an oblique injury, right?
Yeah, but that can be
a while. Yeah. And they've talked about how it's going to be June. Although June's only a couple weeks away, but we don't know when in June. I mean, I think that adds to the crowding. I mean, when Myers is healthy, Myers plays.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question about that. So now you've got, you know, Renfro and Reyes and Margot and Cordero and Janikowski. And I mean, all these guys that are there, and there's two positions, even Perella, although they've moved to second base, but I would expect we'd see Urias soon. There, and that just throws another body into it. So, and I don't know that any, you know, how much trade value do any of these guys have too? And in true Padre fashion, if they did trade a guy, that would end up being the guy that did the best, right? Uh-huh. I mean, he would go on to have the best career if he went somewhere else. So I don't know what the answer is. I think it's complicated, and they need to find out. You know, look, last year Margot looked like he was the kind of guy that could go on to be a really, really good center fielder for the next 6 to 8, 10 years. Now there seems to be question about that. Cordero, you know, is he gonna make contact enough to be the guy? I don't know. Is Jankowski going to be a guy that gets on base 3 times every game? He hasn't shown it before, but he's showing it now. And yeah, guys do get better as their careers go on and things like that. So there's some tough decisions there to be made for sure.
I guess I'm not that excited about Franmil Reyes. I'm just
you're not.
No, I'm not. I've seen this one before,
and he's not defensive.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a big.
I don't know how excited they are about it. I mean,
you get like he's just up.
He's kind of up because they feel like, well, he's done all he can do right now in AAA, and let's see if he can carry it over. And if he does, great. And if he doesn't, you know, well, we've got more guys coming back, and we'll go from there. But I mean, I think he would have been a top 30 prospect though if it wasn't for his injury. So it's not like he's completely without talent. I mean, he got what, $700,000 when they signed him, and I think Cordero got, you know, a fifth of that.
Right.
So, I mean, they obviously believed that he had some talent other than, you know, trying to be the biggest guy on the roster ever outside of Kyle Blanks.
Right.
Yeah, from what I've gathered from him about him is that he's not a complete idiot at the plate. Like, he's
disciplined.
He walks a lot. Mm-hmm. He's not striking out a whole lot. And I just don't see it.
And to me, I think they're trying to, and this might be a little conspiratorial, but as far as trade value goes, if he's hot and he comes up and is still hot, he's someone that can easily be sold to an American League team as a DH with his outfield skills being what they might be.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think the idea. Something there where they could go like, oh, if he's hot now and he comes up and hits 2 or 3 homers the next week, it builds this mystique about trading him in the future.
Right, and I think there was some thought with that with Perella, I think, coming into the season, that he would play for a couple months and then they would spin him to an American, to an American League team. But unfortunately for you know, his OPS, I think, is under 700 right now. So there's not, you're not going to get much for that.
No.
And I don't know how much you're going to get for any of these guys. That's the problem.
Yeah. Totally.
Perella just stays healthy. Like other people.
He's durable at least.
Yeah. I just feel like, I think Franmil might go down as the guy that East Village Times scooped the UT on. That's going to be
the end of that story.
Right.
Yeah, so where are you on Andy Green now? I mean, not to bring up another media story, but a couple of weeks ago in Mexico, there was a Reddit post that was iffy at best, and people, you know, there were stories going around that he was clashing with players. I mean, how do you cover a story like that where a Reddit post comment becomes something part of the story? You guys eventually wrote something up about it. But
we did, and we went back and forth on whether we should write anything. I think the idea was to definitely check it out and see, you know, is there anything going on in the clubhouse? And Kevin did talk to a couple guys, and he ended up quoting Hosmer on it. And I felt like, not that I want other media to sort of set the agenda for us, but I felt like because it was out there so much and it had been, especially once it got onto radio, that I felt like we were kind of in a position where, if we wrote about it, it would be like, well, why are you writing about this Reddit post? And if we don't write about it, it's like, why aren't you writing about this? This could be a story. And so I felt like it was to do what we did with it, which was to, you know, write a story. We quoted Hosmer on it. We put it online. We ran it in the print edition. We ran it inside. We didn't make a big deal of it like that. It was read by a lot of people online, and we moved on from it. I'm not sure, you know, the next time something like that happens, maybe we check it out and we don't write it. I mean, I think it's really a case-by-case basis.
Right.
As far as Andy Green, I don't know that – look, I'm on record as saying I'm not a big fan of managers being like these all-important people that decide whether a team is going to win 95 games or 75 games. Look at Bruce Bochy's career record in the regular season. I think the last time I looked, he was 2 games under 500. He's going to the Hall of Fame because he won 3 World Series. Was he stupid in the years when he lost 98 games? Yeah. Of course not. He didn't have any players. So you know, look, Dave Roberts, everybody wanted to hire Dave Roberts. Dave Roberts did a great job for a couple of years in L.A. This year, the Dodgers stink. Did Dave Roberts get stupid? Of course he didn't. You know, he's the same guy, I would assume, as he was before, except Corey Seager got hurt and Justin Turner hasn't played and he lost his bullpen and then lost some pitching and, you know, all that sort of thing. So I think, you know, not that managers can't make a difference, but to me, especially in baseball over 162 games, if you don't have any players, I don't care if, you know, John McGraw and Tony La Russa and Connie Mack and every other great manager who ever lived, including Bruce Bochy, is in the dugout. It's just not going to matter. You're not going to, you know, like I said, a few games a year to me is the max that's going to be decided. And I don't know how good Andy Green is as a manager.
It's hard to really tell.
How do you
until
tell?
It's hard to tell until they're in a playoff series.
And how much is he managing? Let me ask you this. How much is he managing now to win every single night? Or is he managing with an eye on the future where – And I don't want to pitch Joey Lucchesi another inning because I'm trying to keep his innings load down. Whereas if I was trying to win this game because it was September 14th and we really needed the win, I'd keep him in. And I think there's a lot of that. You know, do I let this guy hit in a situation where maybe I wouldn't normally let him hit because I want to see how he reacts to that situation? And I don't think we have we don't know night in, night out, day in, day out if Andy Green is managing. How he's managing? Is he managing to win every single game, or is he managing to? Certainly, he's managing to win, but he's managing to win in the future as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Friday night game. What was that game where they were down by 9 or whatever? He definitely was not playing, managing to win that game.
Well,
started to come back, and they might have, in reality, could have won that game. He let Mitchell stay in and bat, and so I told we don't know what he's doing right now.
It's
definitely like prolonging the health of his players right now. Is one of the top priorities.
Right. And so I'm not sure. I don't think anybody could form an opinion on Andy Green as a manager at this point because, look, last year they won, 71 games? 73 games?
73, I believe.
Whatever it was. You know, you could argue looking at that team, maybe they should. Maybe with another manager they would have won 66.
Right.
And maybe if Andy Green was on the Dodgers, they would have won 98 and gone to the World Series. I mean, I think so much depends on what you have at your disposal.
Right.
And right now, you know, he doesn't have a lot at his disposal, let's be honest. So
yeah. I just wish he was happier in in-game situations. That's all I want right now. Like, I feel like his face and his mannerisms are so, you know, game 7 of the World Series, and we're not there yet. So, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
loosen these guys
his,
up. Enjoy this. Like,
it's his livelihood. I mean, I hate to get into that too much because, you know, people there were a lot of reasons not to like North Turner as head coach of the Chargers. I didn't think that body language on the sideline was necessarily a big part of that. I had much bigger problems than that.
NFL...
And the same with Mike McCoy and I mean, just kind of anything like that. I mean, Tony Dungy and Bill Belichick and guys like that and Tom Landry, going way back to date myself, those guys were as stoic as could be on the sideline. You know, Rex Ryan jumped up and down and yelled and screamed and, you know, he didn't win any trophies either. So I think sometimes we react a little bit too much. That's who Andy is. And, I don't think you want him to be kind of go against his personality and start being a rah-rah Tommy Lasorda type when that's not his personality.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, speaking of the NFL, this week the Supreme Court passed sports gambling in America, basically, right?
Isn't that? I mean, you can.
As the joke goes, I just can't wait to make my first bet now.
Yeah, I know.
Because, you know, none of us have ever made a bet before.
How is this going to change sports coverage at the UT, though? I mean,
I think it's definitely something that we're going to write about. I do think we need to wait. I think we need to wait and see what happens in California for as much as anything. I don't know how fast is something going to get done here? Is it going to happen in the next 6 months? No. Is it going to happen in the next year? I hope so.
Is it going to be a voter issue?
It's going to be a voter issue in terms of getting a constitutional amendment. Right now, the Constitution of the state, there's an amendment in it that bans sports betting.
Okay.
So there has to be an amendment, and hopefully it gets on the ballot in November, where the vote, but there's no guarantee
it will. That's quick though, right?
Right. And if it doesn't, the next statewide elections are not until, 2020.
Right.
So that has to be passed by voter. That would just set it up where then the legislature could pass a bill, a gambling bill. But there's going to be so many people involved. I mean, starting with the tribes.
Who are not happy about this, right?
No, I mean, I think they could be happy about it, but I think they want to be involved. They're not just going to say, okay, we're going to stay with casino gambling and we're going to let everybody else handle sports gambling. They're going to want to do their own. They're going to want to have a piece of the sports gambling as well. So I think once it gets started, if I had a bigger staff, I would do more with gambling now in terms of writing about it.
Do you mean the Greek style?
I think there's things that could be done to write more about fantasy sports and write more about gambling. But it's just a case where we just don't have the resources at this point. But I would certainly, look to pick up something if other people that we have access to were doing it. And I think if it does become, if we see the day where, you can walk down the street and make a bet on a sports game or pick up your phone and do that the way that, you can do that on horse racing. I mean, I'm not ashamed to say I have an app on my phone. I can bet on horse racing anytime I want. That could be a dangerous thing. I don't let it become a dangerous thing.
Can you show me that app afterwards?
Absolutely.
I think my marriage is going to last about 6 months after this happens. But
I think once that happens, I think you'd have to be foolish not to make it a part of your coverage, because I think more and more people are going to be doing it. As we know, people are betting already in different ways, including on their phones.
Yeah, but this is going to change. This is going to make it. This is going to normalize it so much.
Absolutely.
But wait. Do you think every state is going to automatically adopt this?
No, I don't think every state.
I see it going very much like the marijuana thing, where it's state by
state. I mean, every
state
doesn't have horse racing, for that matter.
Right.
So I think
it's interesting. I don't know if it's going to happen in California. I think that there's enough, and maybe this is just water cooler talk and not informed, but you always hear that gambling will never be legal across America because the special interests in Vegas are they're the defenders of what the Supreme Court struck down. And so I don't know. It's an interesting thing where I don't know if we're ready just to go legalizing it. Gambling is going to be legalized in every state across America in the next 2 years.
Well, I think there's several states that wouldn't want it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the same, there's states that don't want to have marijuana legal.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Or there's prohibitions on alcohol at certain times of day or night.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So,
but I think obviously, we're most interested in having it happen here. But, I went to England back in 2012 and went to a couple soccer matches there. And, right next to the hot dog stand is the William Hill or whatever kiosk. And you could make a bet on, who's going to score the next goal for Liverpool not just on the games, but on individual prop bets like that. So I think we're going to see that here someday in this country. Hopefully we see it in California, and I don't think it's going to lead to the ruination of sports or society or anything like that. Because it hasn't ruined the Premier League, for one thing.
Totally.
And they do it there.
I'm having visions of that Omni buffet area transformed into where you could be betting on the pitch or what's going to happen. Is this next going to be a foul ball and people are throwing down?
That's right.
Crazy.
I want to be a creepy guy who walks in on Sunday morning, flip flops, and just lets it all out. Just bets on everything. And
I'm not sure I've ever heard anyone say, I want to be a creepy guy.
Yeah. That's my midlife crisis. I need to go full into being disturbing in public. But I mean, you are considered the aficionado of Chargers ratings locally. Do you think that this would change the way you cover the NFL? I mean, if gambling is legal we all know that the NFL is basically built on gambling.
Well, we already, every Sunday we have a column. I mean, it's not necessarily a column, but it's like a box that one of our copy editors, Jeff Nahill, does, where he makes imaginary bets each day. Now, whether they're truly imaginary or not, I don't know. But, he makes imaginary bets and people can follow along with that. I think we could do even more with that. And I think it can't hurt the NFL to have more people doing this. You know, look, the NFL says, oh, we don't want this. We don't want this. You know the NFL wants this. You know that all the sports want this because it's going to keep people interested. You know, getting someone to watch a three-hour baseball game maybe isn't that easy. Getting someone to watch a three-hour baseball game when they have something riding on it and they can make a bet on, you know, who hits the next home run or if my player has more hits than your player in a game or whatever, you know, I think that's going to be something that the sports want.
Oh, and I was going to say, to add on to that, the ad revenue from that, when those DraftKings or FanDuels or whatever, when those run into some legal problems, which will probably go away now, I'm assuming.
Well, right? Again, I don't know. It we'll depends see, on like, what kind of lawsuit.
Social, it was those are all like the social. Ads on TV were just for those. Yeah. So I'm sure that if gambling is legal everywhere or in most states, like the books that are going to be advertised, you know, all the different.
Hey, maybe they'll save newspapers. They'll start buying ads in newspapers. So
I think that's a real possibility.
Maybe I'll definitely encourage that to happen.
That's what I'm saying. You might have a whole new staff. Yeah.
I want to see if you can track, if there will be a way, there'll be a way to track betting locally. So while you're reporting on like ratings locally, you can also track how people are betting on that.
I guess it depends. Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on how it gets set up. I mean, Del Mar announces their mutual handle every day during the racing season. So we're able to monitor that and see how much money is bet. Although it breaks down in terms of on track and I think off track and also, on, you know, by phone, mobile wagering. So it would depend on how it gets broken down here. And, you know, do private company, I think in Vegas, in Nevada, they have to announce how much money was bet each month and kind of what their win was for the month. And there's not a really high margin with sports gambling, at least even in Vegas. I mean, relative to other gambling in Vegas, I think the profit on sports gambling is down toward the bottom. But it brings people into Vegas and they gamble on things where the house does make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm also curious to see what happens. You know, now people are used to betting where you've got kind of like a 10% vigorish that goes to the house. You know, is it going to stay at 10%? Is somebody going to offer 5%? Is it going to go to 15%? That's one of the things that horse racing runs into it's called the takeout there where there's money that gets taken out of every bet that goes to different places. And there are people who argue if horse racing would lower that takeout, it would help the sport attract more gambling. So I hope that what happens in sports gambling is that people don't get greedy and say, instead of 10%, it's going to be 20%, because that's, you know, that's when it's really hard to win at that point.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, so this November, there's going to be some stuff on the ballot about what we're going to do with the Mission Valley site.
Apparently. Yeah. I guess.
I hope so.
I guess it might be.
Yeah. This is the stadium talk segment of the program, boys. So check out if you don't want to hear it. But people hate it.
Okay. I'll be right back.
Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah. Have any new renderings coming down the pipe this week?
Right. What do we got this week?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's going, it seems like for the rest of my life, we're going to be arguing about what to do with the Mission Valley site. You might feel that way too. Do you think anything's going to happen, or is this just going to be a place where you two and Beyonce play?
Well, I mean, I think eventually that stadium has to get torn down.
Yeah.
When safety. That is. when that is, safety, expense, all that stuff. I don't know when that is. As to what's going to happen, I always say, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, it would seem like San Diego State, with all its alums, might have an advantage, but the Soccer City people have a lot of money. They're offering a chance, apparently, to get a soccer team here. You know, I think some people would like to see that happen, MLS. They could end up both losing. They could both pass. I mean, I think it's so – there's just no way to know at this point, and I don't think the campaigns have even really gotten going yet. I would assume we're not going to see that until the summer, because it doesn't do much good to start – seriously campaigning now when we've got another election coming up in just a few weeks. So, and you know, there's news every day about what happens with, you know, with these two measures and with the city attorney and all that stuff. So I think we're going to just have to wait and see what happens and cover it to me, it's mostly a political issue at this point.
Right.
For our political people. As it gets closer, we'll see what happens from a sports standpoint.
It feels like the perfect opportunity to practice like a new way of governance where we make like a logical decision. We take the best of both plans and stop politicizing it and go like, this is a very special part of San Diego. Let's do all the right things with it. Instead, it's two organizations.
How long have you lived? I just met you, but how long have you lived here?
My whole life.
Well, then you know.
It's just so frustrating.
I know. That's why the Petco thing is so amazing.
The information, we can do the right thing, and we don't.
How did Petco ever get built in this environment?
That's why John Moore should have a statue of
him. And that's the thing. It's like, how do we not have our arena is 50 years old. It's more than 50 years old.
It's a disaster. It is embarrassing.
Joe Tsai is going to save us all.
Well, I hope. I mean, I would love to see an arena. I was not a, personally speaking, just me personally, I was not a big fan of putting the Charger Stadium downtown.
No,
I thought the Mission Valley was the better place for it. However, I do think if we're going to have an arena, I would love to see that go in the East Village or on the harbor, somewhere like that. Somewhere downtown. I think for a downtown arena would be amazing here. Even if we didn't get an NHL or NBA team. I mean, just if we had the goals and concerts and other stuff. I think just to have a big time arena here is something not just for sports, but for the city. The city should have a big time arena. We have 3.3 million people or whatever it is live in this county. And we have an arena that was built in 1966 or 67 or whatever.
The sports arena is more embarrassing to me as a native San Diegan than Qualcomm. You know, like,
forget about the city. The Seals need a new arena.
Yeah, that's right.
I know, our next team here.
Seals. Okay, well, thanks for coming down, Jay.
Yes.
Check out his podcast, The Hot Lava Pod.
I get to open the cards?
Yeah, we're going to do that. So part of the process of jumping somebody into the Kep Faith as a hopefully frequent guest. See how that goes.
See how this goes.
Yeah. He's opening a pack of Upper Deck 1992. It's the pack that was released during the All-Star Game or around the All-Star Game, and it's my favorite.
The first one is Luis Salazar as a Cub.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Whoa.
So we certainly remember Luis as a Padre before he went to Detroit. Then he came back, and then he was with the Cubs again. So we have him. We have Travis Fryman, another Detroit Tiger, best infield arm, according to this card. Next up is Brian Holman with the Mariners. Now, does his son might pitch here? I don't know if Grant Holman related to Brian Holman?
That's a good question.
The Eastlake kid, I'm not sure. Yeah. I should know that. Chuck Knobloch, Minnesota Twins card.
Throw that over here if you can.
Mark Portugal, starting pitcher with the Astros, is on here. Lonnie Smith of World Series fame.
Yeah.
Braves fans.
It's weird how all these names are in your head.
I know. Braves fans will always remember Lonnie Smith, not necessarily in a good way. we have Daryl Kyle, the unfortunate Daryl Kyle. This is a great card. Dickie Schofield of the Angels.
Nice.
Is another one on here. Mike Benjamin of the Giants. I'm not even sure I remember
it's
Mike
funny
Benjamin.
When you go through
utility
those.
Infielder, maybe.
Yeah.
There's a lot of filler in these.
Joe Oliver, catcher with the Reds.
Remember him?
Not getting a lot of stars in this pack here. Delino DeShields, though.
Hey.
There's,
senior.
There's a good one. That's right. Traded for Pedro Martinez.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Here we go. Ryan Klesko.
Ryan Klesko. Wow. We got to end on that.
Rookie card of Ryan Klesko.
It's gotta be Atlanta, right?
As a Brave.
Yeah. Wow.
I based on the last couple guys, I would say let's end it on Ryan Klesko.
Yeah, that's a winner.
Ryan Klesko's rookie card should definitely end it. So,
well, follow Jay on Twitter at Jay Posner.
SDUT Posner.
Right. Okay. And then check out his podcast with Kevin, and hopefully someday we can get Kevin on to talk about his coverage.
His adventures with the Padres.
Yeah,
that's right.
And Padres Twitter.
We have a new podcast coming tomorrow.
Cool.
So watch for that. I tweet those out as well as, like I said, iTunes. You can subscribe on there. So
sweet.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks no so problem. Much for coming.
Yeah, it's and awesome. Check out thevoiceofsandiego.org and become a member, donate, and they do a lot of great stuff. They let us use the studio. And do you have anything else, Travis?
No, I'm looking forward to some more baseball.
Oh, and Padres. I think Dallas will be at the Storm game tomorrow night. And
he Ooh, another Stormcast episode.
Yeah, he might be recording, and so go say hi to him. And we'll see you next week. All right, thanks.
The Padres are
ball busters.
Well hit deep right at the fence. It is going in.
Right center field, way back there, they're near, going, it's gone.
Great play, off balance, throw to first. They got him, the sensational play by Alan Wiggins.
2-0, high fly ball, well hit right field, look out. Maldonado at the wall, Terry Kennedy, home run.
Drive to deep right field. If it's fair, the Padres will have the lead. It is a fair ball.
Going back is Reynolds.
The show you just heard was part of the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. To hear other great shows like the Voice of San Diego Podcast, I Made It in San Diego, a show all about the people behind the region's businesses, the award-winning Culture Cast, the Kept Faith, a San Diego sports show, and more, please visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts. If you'd like to sponsor any of the podcasts, please email Aaron at voiceofsandiego.org. That's E-R-I-N at VOSD.org.